You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 260. Is the Punk News Podcast a place of courage, a place of conflict, a place of aggression and battle? This is not, you're doing okay and we're all here to support you, Zone. This is pain. This is not boo hoo hoo, mama's gonna pat you on the hiney and make it okay. This is a place of excellence. This is the Punk News Podcast, a zone of competition, a combat arena, a place of perfection. You won't find any weak hearts here. You know the type, the kind you see at the record store bothering their clerk saying, I gotta return this Jawbreaker CD. It's too energetic for me. We're hardcore. We listen to Discharge in the morning, Crass for lunch, Graf Orlock for dinner, and we relax to the Cro-Mags, Age of Quarrel only. This is the Punk News Podcast. We're here to rumble. Bing! We are here to argue. Bang! We are here to break each other down. Boom! And in doing so, we will become something greater. Bippo, do you know what we're doing? While you and your sweetie are under the covers, making goo-goo eyes at each other, awkwardly getting to second base. We were in training. We were practicing. We were trying to tear each other down, tear each other off the mountain, so that we may arise more glorious and more majestic before a uniform, a unison of power and perfection, argument, detente, and affronts. We mech war for fun. We battle for games. This is important. This is epic. This is life and death. This is the Punk News Podcast. We are streetwalking cheetahs, and we have hearts full of napalm. So don't give us your TVI, or else we'll meet you down in the street. And down in the street with me is a man with a lust for life, managing editor Adam White. Adam.
Oh, I'm so tired, John.
And also with us is the passenger, and he rides and he rides all night long, or so I've heard. We are here with reviews writer Tricky Ricky Frankel.
I'm really, that was an awesome introduction.
And here I am, the idiot himself, features editor John Gentile, and we're ready to kick off the Punk News Podcast. Let's dive right into this area of combat, right into this battle zone. Let's go into some mail. First of all, this is from Jason Byerstein. Jason has written in before, and he wanted to update us on his romantic conquests. This is what Jason said. He's like, I just saw Social Distortion at the House of Blues in Dallas on Sunday night. I tried to get Lexi the waitress from Bone Daddies to go with me, but she said, no, you should do the Sandinista episode. So there's that. This is from Blake. Blake says, I would like a few episodes about different albums. I think ones on Bad Religion would be cool, and I think a Clash one would be cool too. This is from, let me see here, this is from Jenna, and all she said is, I love Sandinista. Thanks for the podcast. And this is from our friend Richard out there in the UK. Richard said, I'm off to see the last ever gig of External Mance in Blackpool on Friday. Check them out. They're an early punk band from Scotland formed in 1979, and they released stuff through the 80s. Coalition Blues is just fantastic early punk. I never got to see them in the 80s, so I'm really looking forward to it. If you played it on the podcast, that would make my day. I'm also seeing Bad Religion next week, as well as The Decline, the band The Decline, I believe, in Nottingham on Sunday. I'm having a midlife crisis. Keep eating that Panera bread. Yum, yum, from Richard out there in the UK. Richard, thanks for writing in. We love when you write in. This goes out to Richard. Let's play a tune by External Menace.
Yeah, no.
And we're back. Adam White, people have been saying that they want the Sandinista episode. I think we might have to do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm totally looking forward to that. We should do a Sandinista episode. I also like this idea of doing things about various records that we could, you know, devote our ample eternal energies to actually like learning something interesting to say about, and then we can go and do that. So all right, we'll try to do that. We'll start with the Sandinista one because I guess that's what we talked about. There is no ETA in this world. It's something that we will do at some point.
Well, we got so much free time. I mean, all.
Oh yeah, I mean, and like gobs. I mean, like my prep for tonight's show was in the clear like 3 days of hard research. And a little bit of soft research, actually.
Soft research, you
say? Yeah. I mean, with soft research, you're kind of, you know, you're whispering, you're in bed for, you know, you don't wake up with the alarm kind of thing. Soft research.
Well, I am a fan of soft research, let me tell you. So listen, here's a band a lot of the punk news kids are into, the Gaslight Anthem. They're going on hiatus. A lot of people were surprised. Here's what they said. We wanted to let everybody know that we'll be taking a break from Gaslight Anthem and this next European tour after this next European tour in August. We're all going to do other projects and stay active in some way or another, both in and out of music. So that doesn't actually mean that if you're going to stay active in and out of music, it just means you're not going to lock yourself in your basement and stare at the wall. But
means you're going to be doing squats, John.
Yeah. We'd like to recharge and take a step back until we have something we feel excited about rather than going right back to making a record just for the sake of making the next record. We all feel that this decision is the best that we can make, and it feels like the right one for us. Thank you for everyone who came out and supported us in our band for the last 8 years. We can't wait to see you down the road. A lot of punk. Basically, it didn't seem that the Punk News kids were bummed out. It seemed like a lot of Punk News kids were suggesting maybe it is time for the band to take a break. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I when I heard about this, I was like, yeah, this. I mean, I never was a Gaslight Anthem fan, but I never minded them. But I think there was a review from when they were touring with Against Me last year that got published, and there was a really good line in it that said that it seemed more like they were closing for Against Me than headlining the show.
Ooh, and that is a brutal critique.
That wasn't my review. It was someone else's, but I thought it was a very interesting way of putting it, because when I saw them, the show lacked energy. I was not into Get Hurt at all. And I think they're just kind of, it seems like they just kind of, I don't want to, not hit a wall, but kind of just maybe plateaued for now. And I think this is the right call. I think breaking up would seem kind of like, I think premature. It seems like they just need to just kind of walk away for a little bit. And also, I mean, the other reason why I say, made that comment about their show is, they had so much gear on the stage. They weren't move. They were able to move around. It was not. They sounded good, but aesthetically, it was not, and visually, it was not that great of a show. So I just, you know, went to say hi to Laura and Inge outside of the venue. After it was, I think I do support them on this decision.
Oh, name dropping, Ricky! Wow. So
that's what the band. Oh, for.
Me and Laura Jane Greaves, we were just hanging out, you know, going bowling, hanging out, you know, Inge, you know. We got a deep connection, me and Inge, you know.
They do that after every show. It's nothing special.
He was in Refused. I know of the band Refused. You know, we're basically like brothers.
No, it's just like when Against Me tours, after they're done, they come out and hang out with the fans. So I just decided to do that and get something signed, whatever.
When are you and Mick Jones hanging out next?
Is
he going to let you borrow his car again?
If we do the Sandinista episode, how about that?
This band has had, this band being the Gaslight Anthem, not the Clash, but this band has had the weirdest, most like 90s trajectory, have they not? This used to happen to bands all the time, but it seems to have kind of died off when all the labels realized that nobody actually buys music anymore, where, you know, you would have this band that had an incredible amount of buzz in the quote unquote underground, but not, you know, but we're not so underground that they were necessarily going to be like unpalatable to the masses with a few tweaks. They release a couple records. Everyone gets excited about them in the punk scene. And then they get signed to a major label, release things that nobody seems to give a shit about, and then fade away. Like, that's basically what Gaslight did, right? They, you know, they had records that everyone seemed to like to some degree that were, you know, I guess you could maybe argue that they were of declining quality, but I didn't really think that. I thought their output was pretty good for a little while. And then they signed to Mercury slash, what is Mercury? Mercury Island Universal. Polydor. They signed to some, yeah. They signed to the Universal Music Group, basically, and they released two records that everyone just thinks fall completely flat. And, you know, and here they are. I mean, like, the next move in this type of career is to wait a few years and then sign to Side One Dummy. Right? Because that's how this works usually.
But they were signed to Side One Dummy, weren't they?
I know. That's throwing me. That's throwing me. Usually you signed to Side One Dummy after you went up to the majors and tried some stuff that didn't work, and then you've retreated.
No, I know the next thing. And actually, this is the smart move. You do the Against Me. Now that you have some notoriety within a certain scene, just start your own record label, because the same amount of people are going to buy it no matter what.
I would be actually interested to see what this band would do like if – what would it do like? I don't even know what I'm saying. What this band would sound like if they were recording strictly for themselves. I'm not – I don't accuse them of shilling, but –
But you're going to accuse them of shilling.
I'm going to accuse them of being – of doing probably what I would do in their situation, in that this band had a sound that absolutely could have clicked with, you know, the rest of the world, with the mainstream rock radio audience, whatever that is, if that even exists anymore, right? The stuff that they had released on Side One absolutely could have appealed to those people. So when you're in the position where, you know, you're this band, you're, you know, a lot of people like you, you've got some cred and everything, but your natural sound is pretty close to radio friendly. And then, you know, the major label guy walks in the door and drops the bag of money and he says, well, do you want to try? I don't really fault them for saying like, all right, let's see if we can give this a shot. Because if any band was going to be able to take their sound and like, you know, give it like a 3-degree change from where it is and then start playing to like, you know, then start, I don't know what you could do to be a big band these days, like open for the Foo Fighters or something. I don't know. Right. But like this band was so close to being like super radio friendly, if they didn't already start by being super radio friendly, that they could have, you know, with very small changes to what they were doing, you know, taking a shot at that. And maybe that's what they did. Maybe that's why they ultimately signed to those majors and released those records. But I guess like, but the records weren't that interesting. So I don't know. I don't fault them for trying, because it really seems like they were, you know, they were as close to that as I think any band could be at the moment.
Does that ever happen anymore though, especially in the modern rock context? Is there ever, I mean, in the past 10 years, has there been a band that was had a fairly large following on the independent circuit become a huge radio band? I think now either you're essentially born a huge radio band, especially in the rock context, or you're not. I think to transition from being a small band to being a big band, like you kind of used to be able to do in the late 70s, I think that era is long since passed. I mean,
yeah, someone online made the argument the other day jokingly, but I think they're not necessarily. I think it was actually our ex Punk News podcast host Brian Yancey was talking about this, and he made some sort of flippant comment. We're like, well, I know rock is dead and everything, but and it's in a way, you know, even being the most radio friendly or appealing rock band at this point doesn't necessarily get you all that far in the world. There's not that big of a dedicated audience that's listening for new rock music coming out that, you know, you're all of a sudden gonna gain everybody's attention like you could have if you were in the 70s. So there's that. I always thought that, like, I actually thought that the Dropkick Murphys had a fair chance of doing what I just described.
They're pretty big. I mean,
they were really big on their own. They would have continued to be really big on their own. And then they signed that deal when they left Hellcat where they, I forget the name of the label, but they formed some sort of doesn't really exist virtual label that was a sub label of Warner Brothers, I think, called, God, I don't even remember, had some sailor name. Let's call it like Brass and Tacks, but that wasn't the name of it, right? They had some label like that that they formed that released their stuff. And even before they did that, they were releasing songs that absolutely could have been like radio hits given the right time and era. I forget, off of like, I think it was on the Warriors Code. There's a song called Sunshine Highway that is like, yeah, the most sing along, like, you know, give that song to like, I don't know, like go back in time and give that song to like CCR or something. Right. And let them play that. And like, it would have been a huge hit. Like we're absolutely radio friendly stuff that they were doing outside of the punk things, and not like, not radio friendly in a bad way, just radio friendly in like a super hooky way. And that never really happened for them either. I mean, like, they had that fluke, you know, that fluke hit with Shipping Up to Boston, which was on the Departed soundtrack, which isn't even really a song. So, but that's, but yeah, but they never really went past that. They sort of like one hit wondered it, and then they kept playing to the people that they always played to. But I always thought they were another one of those bands that were like, you know, they have such appeal and so many people like them that given the right push, maybe it would make sense. Like if you were the major label A&R guy and you had to decide, like, who do I dump my bag of money and rocket fuel behind to see if I can propel them to stardom? Like, to me, like a band like Dropkick Murphys or Gaslight Anthem are pretty reasonable candidates to do that. It's actually weirder to think back to the think of like Against Me signing, because like Against Me, you know, they were a fucked up band that was singing about anarchy and things like that. Like, that's less of a match for a major label world than those other two bands were. But, you know,
may I reference Chumbawamba?
Yeah, but outside of Chumbawamba's one hit wonder in the 90s, did Chumbawamba ever do anything on a major that, you know, that got your mom to notice them?
May I reference Amnesia?
Okay,
the second biggest hit after
your mom, but other people's moms.
No, my mom knows just nothing
like
about music.
Johnny G would have been like, "Mom, listen to these Chumbawamba and Crass records."
My mom, my mom knows that David Bowie is a person, but she doesn't know any songs by David Bowie.
Mm. I think also, I mean, I think the overall problem is that rock, like radio rock, really has been sort of just pushed to the side, and what's taken its place is, well, I mean, hip hop was kind of always, at least for the last, like, since the new millennium, I'd say hip hop has kind of been taking over space. And then also, like, I don't ignore country. Like, that has, or like the quote unquote country, some people think it's not real country music, but that has really taken over. I don't think there was a country music awards, you know, five or 10 years ago.
Well, you're right. So, and then I think country is way bigger now than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, so I think rock has just been kind of put on the shelf for a while and has gone underground for a while.
It's now a niche concern.
It's now what?
It's a niche concern now. Like, it's definitely, I would never argue that it is dead by any means. Like, that's an exaggeration. But I think that it's quite true that, like, it's not at the center of the culture. It's not the thing that, like, Western culture is hubbed around at the moment. So,
no, and if you notice, like, the bands that are still together that were around when rock was really the main, you know, the main focus, they're still, Foo Fighters have no problem selling out a stadium. Taylor Swift now, she does. Now, but you won't see any like new big rock band sell out, you know, any kind of stadium. Like, you know, here there's like Dodger Stadium or whatever. I think it's just, again, it's just kind of gone underground. It probably needs to for a little bit.
And actually, that brings up a point that I've been thinking about for the past 3 or 4 years. Is rock exhausted in that, has all that there's been to explore in rock been done? Is there not that much more room for rock to go? I mean, if you look at blues, what could be done in blues that hasn't already been done? What could be done in jazz that hasn't already been done, you know? Has rock basically met its outer limits? Can there be another AC/DC? Can there be another Judas Priest? Can there be another Rolling Stones? Can there be another Bruce Springsteen? Or is it the end of rock? I mean, you're always going to have punk and people that play it, but will we ever see another rock band that it basically captivates Northern America?
I think it's just the public going for the new hot thing and not really knowing, like, and not really – and being told what they like instead of maybe actually making the opinion for themselves and buying what and supporting the artists that they truly like instead of being told to what they think they like.
Oh, I think most people generally enjoy what they've been told they look to like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they're not being – but back then, like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, they were being told to like Sum 41. They were being told to like you know, when
Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba, fine. You know, they still play tub thumping at stadiums. But do you hear any like new any kind of new up and coming band? No, you have, you know, Taylor Swift, Miley Cyrus, Kanye West.
But that's my question.
And some country artists and like Skrillex.
Has rock and roll been used up? Is it? I mean, has what's been explored in the context of rock and roll been explored? I don't know if that question is answerable.
I think it's still dormant. I think people are just looking at the new hottest thing.
Of the audience. It's a question of the genre. Has what's been done with rock and roll been done?
No, I think it can keep being reinvented. It's just a matter of how many people are paying attention, I think.
This is the kind of discussion that we would drink a lot and then talk about until all hours of the night when I was in university. The argument that you made, John, I actually think is very compelling because, and what I mean by that is where you were comparing it to blues or to jazz, because I remember what started this conversation on our end was way back in some of like the earlier days of Punk News when we would be posting about bands that were doing what like everyone today lovingly calls Ramones core, but back then I don't feel like a lot of people were calling it that. So they were just doing that kind of like throwback, you know, late 70s New York sound. And I remember that a lot of people were, it felt like they were more critical about it. Like it was, that was less accepted. And part of the criticism that people would have set, we were saying, were just that like you had people that were saying that like, you know, oh, this is, you know, this is old and it's tired and it's been done. And they're just doing what every other band had done. And this was the criticism of a lot of the punk that was coming out in like the late 90s. When everything broke, right? Oh, Green Day sounds like, you know, Green Day is just trying to sound like, you know, Stiff Little Fingers or something. And Rancid is just sounding like The Clash. And
which isn't true. I'm not the world's biggest Rancid fan, but Rancid is not just a Clash ripoff. But go ahead.
No, but that was the criticism that was coming out from everyone. And I never got that defensive about it, even though I was a fan of all those bands. Like those were bands that were coming up when I was getting into punk. I never got defensive like, oh, this band sounds like The Clash. Like I was always looking at it in the way that you just described, where I was saying like, well, you know what? If you're a good, you know, I like this band because I like this sound. I like this style of music. And if I'm going to go see a band live and they're going to play this style of music that I like, then I'm probably going to be happy with it. In the same way that if I went to a jazz festival and I like, I don't know, piano jazz, and there's someone there playing good.
What kind of jazz do you like? Piano jazz.
Piano jazz. Hey, right? And there's someone there playing good piano jazz or whatever, right? I'm not going to be like, oh, this was good when Oscar Peterson did it, but I'm not going to listen to this. It's derivative, right? It's just kind of like, no, I'm there because I enjoy that. I enjoy this sound. I want to hear bands play this kind of thing. And I made the argument, well, Drunk Adam made the argument back in, I'll say 2002, that's okay. That, hey, you know what? If the world is going to move on and we're all going to be, you know, left in this weird, you know, retro scene where we're just listening to bands that sound like the Ramones in the 2050s, whatever, that's fine. Like jazz and blues seems to somehow get by doing that kind of thing, and those guys seem happy enough, so fine, I'm fine with that. And I made that argument then. I don't know if I quite buy that now. I think that I'm a little bit more on the Ricky end of it here, where you know, there's ebbs and flows to things, and you know, the next big, we haven't figured out what the next big rock thing is necessarily going to sound like in a way that actually captures the public imagination. We may not for years and years or ever, but I don't think that it's impossible, but I think it's definitely harder. And the one thing that that constantly baffles me is that every once in a while I'll turn on the radio and I'll turn on the modern rock station here. And it's in the last 2 to 3 years, all of the rock radio stations around here have slightly shifted their format, and it's kind of weird because it's like very visibly aging. So here in Ontario, you know, all of our radio is dominated by what's coming out of Toronto. So what we had out of Toronto as like the two big stations that did rock, where we have a station up here called Q107, which was the classic rock station. And then we had 102.1 The Edge, which was the modern rock station. And if you turned on the classic rock station, you would get things ranging from like oldies until, I'm going to say, like, you'd get some like 80s hair metal stuff in there, right? And then if you turned on The Edge, you'd get things from sort of like punk forward.
Would you get punk?
If you were listening to an interesting DJ that was picking their own stuff, you might get some old punk in it. But I mean, generally, you were getting stuff that had come that. Well, I mean, punk forward, conservatively, but like more likely like Nirvana forward. Okay. Mm-hmm. But now they've shifted. So that classic rock station's not calling themselves classic rock anymore. They're now calling themselves like Toronto's rock station. And you can turn on that thing and you'll hear, you know, songs by the Rolling Stones or The Band or, you know, Dylan. And then you'll also hear the Foo Fighters or U2. So they've moved that demo up. And 102.1, the new rock station, they're calling themselves, what are they calling themselves? Their current billing is modern music. And if you turn them on, they're still pretty much doing what they were doing in that they're going for whatever, you know, whatever 16-year-old quote unquote rock fans are listening to these days. But if I turn into like their top 30, I really feel like I don't know any of these bands, and none of the bands to me sound like the kind of rock band that I would have gotten into. Like, they don't sound like the kind of band that, not just that they don't appeal to me right now, but I don't think that if I was that age, like, it would have appealed to me. It feels like the kind of music I would have rejected. I don't know the names of these bands off the top of my head, so I'm having a hard time actually identifying, you know, who they are in this conversation. But like, I'm looking at their top 30 right now, and outside of bands that I know just because they're, I guess, as big as you could be, outside of the Mumford and Sons of the world, I'm seeing like, I don't know, Cold War Kids, USS, like,
I've been noticing a lot of indie bands, like indie rock.
Yeah, it's a lot of indie rock, but it's a lot of indie rock. Like, when I think of indie rock, like my brain goes to, like, or at least in the Canadian context, when I think of indie rock these days, my head goes, oh, so like, you know, something like Broken Social Scene, or they sound like that, where there's this kind of like, you know, this twee kind of atmospheric, kind of weird. But when I'm all this indie rock that I'm hearing on here, it's not that. It's not indie rock in like the old school sub pop context where,
right,
you know, really what they are is that they're like rock bands that came after punk, but they're not really playing punk. It's like all these bands, they all kind of sound the same to me. They all have this super heavy reverb on everything that they're doing, so that all of their choruses sound like there's like 40 people kind of multi-tracked to do these kind of sing-alongs, and the wall of sound production that's on everything. And I don't know any of the bands that I'm talking about right now, so I can't give like our listeners who actually know what this shit is a good example of it. But it's all very hollow to me. So I don't know. Rock has moved into this weird place where what is modern rock, if it is rock, is not what I want to listen to. And all the old people stations are starting to play stuff that I used to think was contemporary music. So yeah, the outlook is not really great for me.
I would say, though, punk rock-wise, I've really been energized in the past 2 years or so. I think there's a lot of new punk rock bands that are doing new punk rock sounds, but it's definitely punk. So I'm really excited by that kind of stuff.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. That's always been how it's been for me. Like, I'm, you know, I constantly find stuff that is on the punk spectrum that I'm totally happy with and I'm energized by and sounds awesome to me and sounds new and fresh, even if it's not new and fresh, maybe if you compare it to previous things in the genre. And that's always been the case. I'm just kind of talking about like
rock,
the stuff that we used to call alternative.
You know, one other thing, why I'm not too worried about rock's, kind of being pushed to the side on the mainstream wise, because in terms of, first of all, I find that underground music is a lot more genuine in general, and a lot more fun. It's like, it's a little more camaraderie when only a certain amount of people know about something that's awesome that's going on. No one else really does. And no one else, knows. But I think like, a lot of, and bringing it back just to punk rock, if you, what punk rock was about was, looking at the mainstream rock and looking at it and going like, that's fucking awful. Let's do this instead. So I'm pretty okay with the fact that rock is not the center of attention when it comes to radio music.
The only risk that I see in this, because like I agree with you that like I'm selfish in that when I hear a cool band that I like, I'm usually totally cool if they remain a cool little band that I like. Right. I guess I can't even mark the argument these days where I can say like, oh, I hope this band gets really big so they they can make some money, because they never would make any money at this point anyways, right? So at this point I'm like, you know what? It scares the shit out of me that the Dirty Nil just signed a record deal with someone. I just want them to play in St. Catharines.
But that's
all
selfish,
the time.
Adam. Don't you want your like? Let me counter that.
Hold on. Let me get the point I was making though. Right? Is that like
Jumbo Wump?
Like my yeah. That's, all your points are Jumbo Wump. I always reactionarily do that where I'm like, no, I'm okay with these things staying underground, with these things staying like a thing that's, something me and my people are into, and fuck the rest of the world. The problem with that though, that I could see is that who's feeding the next people in at that point? Like the kids that are out there that are going to form the next bands that are cool, they're probably not going to start their musical journey by listening to the bands that are the underground bands that we think are cool. They're probably going to start their musical journey by listening to, like whatever the big radio thing is. They're going to start their journey by listening to Mumford and Sons. Right. And, and one day someone's going to ask, guy who's in the coolest rock band ever, that's really super underground and awesome and woo anarchy, how'd you get into music? What was your first CD? And he's going to be like, oh, Crass. But it was like, his first CD was like Mumford and Sons. Right. But you need those big rock bands out there to start to feed new people in. So that's my only worry, is that like, as we become more niche, are we going to lose the next interesting generation of people, and then things really get stagnant? That's where I'm going. You were saying, John, Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba. What I was saying,
like, you get knocked down, but then you get up.
You get up again.
Yeah.
That's never going to keep me down. What I would say though is people like to think of remaining small in the underground as a sort of cocoon that keeps you warm and safe. But it can also be an instrument of destruction. For younger bands, it's cool to say, oh, they're so underground. Because when you're 18, when you're 19, when you're 20, when you're 21, when you're 22, 23, 24, you're not really worried about money so much. But once you get a little bit older, you're like, you know what? I'm going to be old and shitting in diapers one day, once again. Right. And so I need cash. You know what I mean? And so when a band stays underground and like only a few people know about them, eventually the band just gets exhausted because they have to work a day job or whatever and can't do both, just because there's not enough energy. I've said this example before, is I can virtually guarantee you that Classics of Love would still be around if they had made more money, if they were more popular. Classics of Love was a phenomenal, phenomenal band, and I don't have any insight into the band, but I'm pretty sure they were all getting along really well, and they loved being Classics of Love. They just couldn't make ends meet just because they weren't really that big. Whereas if a band can sort of break out of, you know, that tiny niche audience and actually make more cash, then they're more likely to stay together, and John Gentile is more likely to reap the rewards of a second and third Classics of Love album. Because let me tell you, I would have loved a new Classics of Love album. You know?
But, like, am I too cynical to look at that and say, like, they never would have made money because no one makes money? Like, is that too naive, like, someone's making money?
A little bit, and you can make money if you know how to make money. You have to be smart and careful. Off makes money. Melvins make money. Dwarves make money. And
yeah, but hold on. All of those examples are examples of bands either that feature people that had a career before everything went to shit, or, you know, are bands that had pre-existing fan bases. Like Melvins had many years in a healthy music economy to kind of build their audience.
Mm. Well, it can be done. Here's an example. How about Screaming Females?
Do they make money?
They make not great money. They make – well, I haven't seen their income, but I'm pretty sure they don't work aside from Screaming Females.
I mean, if that's the case, that's wonderful. I think it's been driven into my head so much that, like, whoa, the poor music industry, everything has gone to pot, that I just assume that no one's making any money.
Yeah, well, no one's making – the only people making big bucks are gigantic acts. More and more you see a separation. Like, you know, it used to be a spectrum. Like, the bigger you are, the more money you make. Now nobody's making money. Well, either you're making just a tiny bit of money if you're moderately popular, or you're making gigantic bucks because you're one of the top 20 artists in North America. You know, and if you're not on that top 20 artists, you're not making tons of money.
Were we talking about the Gaslight Anthem?
You know, I guess – how about that as an example? Gaslight Anthem was making pretty good money. Again, to me, he's making pretty good money.
Yeah, but look what they did. They have their own label now.
I don't think that's why they're – I mean, they were making money before then.
I don't know. Well, I genuinely don't know.
I mean, they certainly were. I mean, Against Me's been their full-time gig since, you know, 2000, you know.
Yeah. I guess you have to look at how they operate too, and maybe this is what you were coming back to, is that, like, Against Me, what do they tour like 180 days out of the year, or something like that?
They
play and they gig a lot. So I think that's maybe what it comes down to is, like, if you're going to make a living off this, like, you don't play, you know, every third weekend or something like that. Like, you are on the road constantly. Like, that is your life.
And then merch sales.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? And that's how you're doing it. Oh, John. You know, this is weird because we talked a lot about this and I think it was a really interesting discussion, but I don't care one bit about the Gaslight Anthem.
I don't care about them either. I interviewed him before they were popular, and he was a nice guy. I'll say that.
I don't begrudge them, but it's interesting that they spurned this rambly.
Well, because they're like a huge – like. Actually, not to drag this conversation out, but I do enjoy the fact that punk news has certain eras, you know, like there was the org core era, or, you know, where everyone was in love with the Lawrence Arms and Hot Water Music. And then after that, there was kind of the Against Me era, when people were in love with Against Me. And then there was kind of the Gaslight Anthem era, where people were in love with Gaslight Anthem. I'm not sure what the era was after that. I think the era after that is a little bit more scrambled.
As in Bomb the Music Industry record scrambled?
Actually, no, the answer is Bomb the Music Industry. That's what was after Gaslight Anthem, Bomb the Music Industry. Or was that or did I have blinders on and I thought they were bigger than they actually were, punk news-wise?
I don't know if your ordering was right there, but all of those bands kind of like went in and out of vogue at some point. I feel that a lot of them still are. They take themselves off the table. I mean, on the one hand, like everyone is super in love with the Lawrence Arms all the time. I didn't feel like there was that much craziness about their last record. Like, everyone seemed to like be like, "Hey, you know, it's Arms record."
But I'm saying there was an era where they sort of represented the punk news identity, sort of.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Do we have one now? Is there a punk news band now?
Chumbawamba, for sure.
Hmm.
I don't think there is one now, honestly. Let me think. Well, listen, let me think while you guys talk
like,
about this.
Like, the most I could guess would, like, maybe Masked Intruder.
Yeah, but I think that era – I mean, but see, Masked Intruder was too derisive. A lot of people loved them. A lot of people did not love them, you know.
This has been a long slog of a rambly conversation. Ricky, play a song, yeah, and we'll come back.
Okay, so I have a German band. These guys, I remember for somehow I came across this song's music video on YouTube, and a few years ago, and I forgot how. This is,
everyone loves that video. This is Du Hast by Rammstein.
Du Hast. Well,
no,
but Rammstein.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
But anyway, so this is this band's called Fightball. They're out of Berlin. They sing in English. But they had an album come out in 2011 called The Hyperbole of a Dead Man. And the song that the music video of the song that I saw was a song called Crossroads. It's a fun little, you know, food fight thing, but it was pretty cool. They kind of got like this Bad Religion kind of vibe to them, but they're different. They're cool. If you like the song, you can check them out at fightball.de, and they're on Facebook and on Bandcamp. So again, this is the album's called The Hyperbole of a Dead Man, and the song is called Crossroads. So here it is.
We're back. That was Fightball, right? F I, yep. Like Fightball, like
one word. Yeah,
Fighting Bal. That is actually a really cool name.
Right. KMFDM, right? Ricky, that's how you spell it. KMFDM.
No.
Come at us, Germany. What are you going to do? Oh, all right. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about some other stuff here. Bikini Kill are set to reissue their original demo tape. So this is going to be called, they're titling this thing Revolution Girl Style Now. It's coming out on September 22nd of this year via the band's own Bikini Kill Records. It'd be weird if it was not the band's label, but it was
somebody else's record label.
Like, well, the names match, I suppose we should. The re-release, it was mixed by Fugazi's guy, Picotto, and mastered by John Golden. It's going to include three bonus tracks that were not on the original tape, but you can find the full track list and everything over at Punk News. I don't see in our story whether this is going to be reissued as a tape.
A CD and record.
Yeah, so... So anyways, this is cool. John, what do you think?
I think it's cool, man. Bikini Kill is cool. What's been said about the band has already been said. I kind of think maybe people are forgetting about them a little bit. Their earliest releases, and actually all the releases, rock. Kathleen Hanna is really cool, and I'm excited for this release.
For me, like, I mean, I never got too into them. It's been a while since I had listened to them until today, so... I think for me, this is something I'll check out when it comes out, but I don't think I'll like if I find like the MP3s, I'll probably just kind of give them a listen to see if I dig them or not. But, for me, this might be, I'm leaning towards, this might be something just for me to skip. No, you know, no, like nothing like to begrudge them or anything like that. But, you know, I understand their importance to the scene though. They are, an important band.
Do you think that there's, and I don't know who I'm addressing with this, I guess maybe John, but like, is this maybe the one band that is due for I don't mean a reunion. I mean a revival in like the consciousness of the punk scene.
No,
like,
because people are always semi aware of Bikini Kill.
Yeah, but it always feels like that. Like they're always semi aware of Bikini Kill, but like I never hear anyone like fawning over. Like, you know, like, man, Bikini Kill, like, and just like, you know, talking about it in the same way, like in the same way that they talk about, like, you know, when the same way they're talking about the Clash or one of those, or Fugazi or one of these things, like, cause like Bikini Kill was hugely impactful. They made, you know, and their stuff is genuinely really good, but I never feel like anyone, you know, they're always mentioned in passing or something like that.
You know what? I'll tell you exactly why that is because they're sort of trapped in the nega zone, if you will. And by that, I mean, Bikini Kill is an awesome, awesome band, but they're not, in my opinion, and I think most people's opinion, they're not quite Clash good. They're not quite Slits good. They're not quite Ramones good. They're extremely great band, but they're very few people's top one or two records. Conversely, they're an excellent band, but they're not so obscure people are like, oh, do you know this obscure band that's really good? And then people freak out when the band gets back together that no one really cared about to begin with, but they want to act like they're cool. So they know that so the band gets back together. They're like, oh, I can't believe this band gets back together. Even though we never really care about them, now we're acting like we care about them just because we want to seem like we're hip and it's some secret thing. Bikini Kill's problem is that they were an excellent band, so they never really had that super lull where people just forgot about them entirely so that there was a reunion. Bikini Kill has always sort of been around, so no one has the super urge to say, we super duper need to celebrate Bikini Kill. And also, second, and I've talked about this a great deal, is the Bikini Kill chronology is much less convenient than bands where people are like, oh my, like for example, Nirvana. Nirvana is widely considered one of the greatest bands ever. I don't think they are, but I understand why people think they are. And it's because they have three records and they never had a chance to do crappy things because Kurt Cobain committed suicide. By contrast, Queen is an amazing, amazing band, but they had a lot of bad records near the end. So Queen is not nearly as heralded as a band like Nirvana or a band like the Beatles that broke up at the height of their popularity. Similarly, Bikini Kill, even though the band broke up, all the members continued with various projects, be it, oh my God, what's the name of Kathleen Hanna's group that's actually really good? Le Tigre. You know, there's Le Tigre. And then there's her new band, Julie Ruin. So even though the band broke up, There's a consistent chronology of excellent records, but not enough time to get wistful about the band.
John, I don't know how I can top that. That was pretty good. Let's regale us with the tale of Moz.
Oh, man. Well, this is
so dumb.
I hate how politically correct this is. Kind of funny, even though it might make me a bad president. This guy, Morsi got goosed at the airport. What happened was Morsi was – and actually, though, I'm going to come out on Morsi's side on this one, as I always do. Morsi was at the airport, and he said he went through the metal detector. And he said after he went through the metal detector, a TSA agent came up and grabbed his wiener and balls. And then while he was getting his wieners and balls grabbed, the TSA's agent's supervisor came over, and basically the guy – left while, like, as soon as he saw a supervisor coming over, which is Morsi implying that the guy was inappropriately or just grabbing Morsi's wiener just to grab Morsi's wiener. Which, honestly, if you're Morsi, could actually be the case. People love Morsi sexually and also platonically. So Morsi wrote this post, and basically he said that he wasn't going to file a complaint, but then the British forces with him said the British Airways Service Special Services told him to. And basically, Morsi is always an excellent writer. And basically, he says, let me see here. What the security officer was saying was, your opinion will never count in the eyes of the law. The words, that's just your opinion, said by the security officer, volunteered themselves from the officer's mouth before he had even heard the question. He knew he could be confronted, but he also knew that he could never be challenged, even though the entire incident is most likely on closed-circuit television. After Morsi complained, the TSA released a statement saying, TSA takes all allegations of misconduct seriously and strives to treat every passenger with dignity and respect. Upon review, closed-circuit TV's footage, TSA determined that the supervised officer followed standard operating procedures in the screening of this individual. So I have two angles we can take, and I'll let you guys take it either. Do you guys want to take the sexual assault angle, or do you guys want to take while Morsi is basically the most punk rock guy ever angle?
Either one sounds so frustrating.
Well, let me do both. First of all, people like making fun of Morsi, or I mean, I find it convenient that people are so on this anti-sexual assault platform until it happens to someone they don't personally like. Sexual assault is sexual assault no matter who it happens to. And people are like laughing at Morsi because he got sexually assaulted. That just goes to show a lot of people, I guess, use sexual assault platform not as a way to better society, but rather as a way to elevate themselves above the other people, which is quite grotesque when you think about it.
Well, and to be hypocritical.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It is hypocritical. Yeah. And so sexual assault is a sexual assault, even if it happens to somebody you don't like, which is why it really isn't a laughing matter, even though I kind of laughed. It's lame to sexually assault anybody, but I guess the fact that it's Morsi because he's so serious makes – I don't know. I don't want to dig myself in a hole.
I don't know. You know, if you're in an airport, at least in the U.S., I mean, I've been pulled out of lines and gotten the pat down. It's just not – I mean, I'm kind of siding on Morsi on this one. This one, it's just – even if it's not counted in the eyes of the law as sexual assault, it's still invasive as fuck.
To be
pulled out of a line, quote-unquote, randomly. But I have a feeling if they do kind of look out for single for males who are not traveling with anyone. I mean, both times I've been pulled out and I've seen it, that's happened to me. And, you know, I've seen it happen other times too. And, I don't know if it's not sexual assault, it's like right on the line. Cause like, you know, they get pretty close and it's just not, it's slightly embarrassing and just really shitty. So I guess I'm on Morrissey's side on this one because it's just really, really invasive, not fun.
Well, I do think this officer wanted to grab Morsi's wiener. I think that's true. I mean, I think this was a sexual assault.
Well, also, I mean, the TSA staff aren't exactly you know, the they're not the cream of the crop. They're not the cream of the crop, and they really don't give a shit about your opinion. They're like that person behind the desk at the DMV.
They're kind of worse. They're kind of like pervos. You know what I mean?
They're worse, and just like they're just what those, you know, miserable workers that just don't care. They're just waiting for their next break. And they don't care how they treat people. And if they see a celebrity, I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, try and take advantage of the situation. Of course, they fucked with the wrong guy because he'll yell about anything. So,
yeah. I don't actually doubt. I know I'm reading this and I'm like, I'm kind of on Morrissey's side here. Like, I don't doubt that this happened the way that he described it. I don't see at all what he would have to gain by fabricating or exaggerating this.
Well,
Morrissey can get into the news by doing all kinds of nutty things. He just needs to like open his mouth and then say things, right? So it's not like he's starved for attention. It's not like. Like I don't buy any of the like, oh, this is just Morrissey being a weirdo kind of stuff. Not that too many of our readers said that, but I could understand if that's the immediate impression whenever Morrissey seems to pop up in the news. It's like, oh, what's he up to again? Like I don't think it fits his MO of being Morrissey to be like to exaggerate that someone groped him. That doesn't seem like something he would do. So I'm going to take it at face value. It sounds like this happened to him, and it sucks.
Here's another question. Generally speaking, the punk community hates Morrissey, although there are pockets of the punk community that love Morrissey. Morrissey hates cops. He's anti-capitalism. He's pro-veganism. He's anti-gender-based stereotypes. And he's anti-invasion of privacy and government over control. That's basically crass. That's basically Jell-O. Why does the punk community hate Morrissey so much when he's so punk rock?
Because Jell-O and Crass don't have a fucking god complex. That's why.
You don't think Penny Rimbaud and Jell-O has a god complex?
Not to the extent that Morrissey does. I think Morrissey literally also thinks he's like a, you know, a gift from God. Well, I think the other two. He's talented. He's a special musician. I get that. But there's a way to not be fucking condescending and a dick about it, you know?
You think it's because he's so condescending.
It just turns people off. I just don't listen to his music because of that. I just get that like that shiver down my spine. Like, fuck, I don't want to listen to this guy.
I'm trying to think of any punk rockers that are that condescending. Adam, what do you think?
I don't necessarily think that like that the punk rock community doesn't like Morrissey for any particular reason that the rest of the universe doesn't like Morrissey at times. I mean, like, he's a difficult guy to love. He is.
Yeah.
For all the reasons that we've ever talked about, he's intransigent. He's difficult. He will write things that are completely brilliant. And then he will put together things that sound like someone is making a parody of Morrissey. So I totally get why people don't like him. He suffers from the same sort of, you know, difficult artist syndrome that a lot of the people that on this show, at least we profess to really like, suffers from. It's the John Lydon thing. It's the, you know, it's that. It's he is made part of his persona that he's going to be an ass about stuff. And you know, that's going to, some people will take, hey, this guy's an ass above any of the particular, you know, causes or whatever's that they might support. So some people, that is the more important thing.
Speaking of a band, a lot of the punk news people do like the Flatliners, they've released a new track. It's called Broken Men and it's off their upcoming compilation called Division of Spoils, that is due out August 7th. Did you guys dig this? So it'll be out by the time you hear this. Did you guys dig this? Do you guys like the Flatliners? Are you excited for a Rarities compilation?
I love the Flatliners. Dead Language is my favorite record of whatever the year it was that came out. I'm really big on this band. This song is okay. I'm cool with it. It's not my favorite Flatliner song or anything like that, but I'm down. Having a B-side compilation in 2015 or whatever it is weird.
I love B-side compilations.
No, like, I mean, I have loved a lot of B-side compilations, but I can't recall the last time I've ever, let's say, acquired one that I've cared about. Like, I feel that, like, with my current listening habits being, you know, if something's on, you know, the B side of a 7-inch or something like that, I kind of want the 7-inch. Or if it's, you know, some esoteric track and it's on, you know, whatever digital thing I'm using, RDO or whatever, I'll go listen to it there. I don't have a lot of places in my life right now where I need the collection all in one place, or at least I don't feel like I do. Or at least none of the bands that I seem to care about has delivered one to me in a way that has made me happy. So I feel like I was really big on B-side compilations and stuff like that, like 10 years ago, but I can't recall the last one that I even am aware of. So, yeah.
You know, I love the Flatliners too, and I'm just looking through their discography real quick because I want to be able to reference. Okay, yeah. I did not like. I found Dead Language to be okay. I loved the first three albums, and I especially loved Cavalcade, but I did not. I couldn't get into Dead Language. So I think this B-side collection here will be kind of interesting, especially to check. I really like this song. But what got me back, like, kind of got me hopeful about the band again after Dead Language was that EP they put out this year before it, which was the Resuscitation of the Year single. And the B-side, which is also on Division of Spoils, is called Fangs. And that is just a monster of a song. It's really good. So I don't think I'll be picking this one up physically. I might check out a few of the new songs that are on there. So, I think I have hope now. Yeah, that's all I got for this.
I'm trying to think of some of my favorite B-side compilations. There's the Morrissey B-side compilation, which actually isn't that great. Although Morrissey does have some phenomenal B-sides. There's the Rancid B-side compilation, which is pretty good. I'm trying to think. There's the Spitz B-side compilation, which is really good. And I'm trying to think of some other. Well, you know, one of the most famous B-side compilations ever, Black Market Clash.
I knew you were going to bring that up. Like, of course, the most famous one ever is the most famous one ever. I mean, when's the last time you've been able to go out and pick up a copy of the Cost of Living EP? Like, you need that. It's without it, you're screwed. So, you know, that's no. I nixed that one from the list.
Wait, you nixed it because.
Because it's the obvious best answer. Find a better, more recent.
Find a more recent B-sides compilation. Let me think. You guys talk about Nightbirds while I think.
Mm-hmm. So, anyways, we're going to talk about Nightbirds. Nightbirds has they've gone and they have announced the title of their upcoming record. Did we not mention this last week? I feel like we did. Whatever, we'll mention it again.
I think you guys talked about the new song that they put out.
Anyways, last week was sort of like a fog, so I don't really know what we did last week. The new Nightbirds record's coming out in October, October 2nd to be precise, and it has the title of Mutiny at Muscle Beach.
Great title.
Which is amazing. Yep. The cover art's cool. Everything about this is cool. So this thing is 12 songs. It has a song on it called King Kong. It has a song on it called Son of Dad. So there you go. I don't know why those jumped out at me. Anyways, though, yeah, we all love Nightbirds. That's super obvious. Mutiny at Muscle Beach. It's out on Fat Records on October 2nd. So everyone should probably be into this because it's probably going to be really good. Yeah, John, do you know any more B-side compilations that are super amazing?
There's a couple good Rolling Stone ones from like 2001.
we could mention the one that, at least as far as B-side compilations goes, was pretty fucking enormous because it ties into our next story that we're going to do here.
Oh, can I just real quick about the Nightbirds album?
Yeah.
I just sent in my review of the new Fat Wreck comp, and their new song that they released earlier this week was last week was Left in the Middle. And if that's just a window into what this album sounds like, it's going to be – I think October is going to be a really good month for punk rock releases, especially because also Leftover Crack's new album is going to be coming out that month too. I'm really also excited to see where CJ Ramone's place was on this, and where he kind of contributed. And if you can check out that Fat Wreck comp, the new one it's really, really good. There is something on there for everyone. Even if you don't like every single, song on there, the new songs, the unreleased songs are all really good. So check that out too.
How about Anthrax's Attack of the Killer Bees? From 1989.
You're really stretching. So we're going to talk about NoFX right now. So NoFX is one of these this actually is going to maybe illustrate my point. So NoFX a few years ago released an enormous B-sides compilation called 45 or 46 Songs That Weren't Good Enough to Go on Our Other Records. It was... basically like the first CD was all B-sides and the second CD had Fuck the Kids and Surfer on it.
Dude, I just listened to F the Kids. That is a great, I mean, I've heard it before, but I just listened to that for the first time in like a year or two yesterday. That is a great EP, F the Kids. I love that EP.
Yeah, so if you look at that compilation, so this is why these used to be exciting for me, but I don't feel like they are anymore. So, you know, this has all these songs on it that some of them are pretty good. Some of them are just not great because it's NoFX. But, you know, it was a place where I could go and listen to, you know, We Threw Gasoline on the Fire and Now Have Stumps for Arms and No Eyebrows, or the song Pump Up the Valium, both of which I really like, without having to go pull out the respective Punk-O-Rama compilations on which those were originally found. So it was useful in that respect. But now, like, if I want to hear one of those songs, and maybe I'm spoiled by all my internets here, but I can just, like, pull up my thing and just type in NoFX, We Threw Gasoline, and then the song appears and I hit play. So I think maybe it's that reason that, like the internet has ruined my need for B-side comps. So
it's probably – I think they're now really just more for those really dedicated fans that want physical releases still.
I mean, but that said, to circle everything back to the Dirty Nil here, there are totally songs by that band that I love that, as far as I know, have no normal physical release. You know, they're just in various places on the internet. So, hey, if someone wants to throw all of those on a couple sides of vinyl, I'll buy the shit out of that. So, yeah. Anyway, so NoFX, right now they're on tour. They're going on tour. I don't have the story in front of me. NoFX is doing something, and what they're doing is they're going to be playing the Longest Line in its entirety at this event.
On the Fat Tour.
Yeah, no, it's on the Fat Tour. Yeah, okay. But I'm totally blanking on like what they were actually doing. But yes, it's the Fat Tour, celebrating 25 years of Fat Records. So they're playing the Longest Line.
Adam, effed up compilation they put out about 2 or 3 years ago of all the B-sides. Bam, 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 bam. Epics, not Epics in Minutes, the other one. Couple tracks. Bam, 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 bam.
All right, fine. You have found a modern example that I can't deny. So, anyways, NoFX. So they're going out. They're playing the Fat Tour. 25 years of Fat Records is being celebrated, and they're going to be playing the Longest Line in its entirety, which is totally fitting, being that the Longest Line was the first release that was ever put out on Fat Wreck, at least as far as I understand it. So there you go. That does mean that a bunch of people are going to have to listen to them play Eat the Meek, which I guess you might want to do or you might not. I don't know. Does this resonate to you guys at all? Like, were you?
Yeah, for me it does, because I will be at the last Fat Wreck tour show in Hollywood, and this is one of the shows I'm really looking forward to for this year, because the lineup's just insane, and there's some bands I've been dying to see that I haven't seen that I've been wanting to see for a while, or I missed. And also, this is kind of nice because that they're doing this whole EP, because I believe Lagwagon will be doing all of Trashed for this tour as well. So, you know, I think that's a nice little coupling there. Is the Fat Tour coming to any of you, either of you? I don't have the dates in front of me.
It's the first date of it either was or is in Toronto, and it either just happened or is just about to happen.
I think it did.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like it may have. I may have either just missed it or I am just about to miss it. So put it that way. Not because I want to miss it. It sounds like a totally wonderful show. I'm just, you know, full of babies like a possum. So it's hard
for me to go.
But yeah, this is cool. John, what's your opinion of I guess this?
As I've said before, I used to not be a NoFX fan at all, and I'm still not a huge fan, but I like them more and more. And the more and more I listen to them, the more and more I like their crazier, wilder songs, but also they're more touching songs. I think My Orphan Year, Fat Mike's acoustic version, is a beautiful, beautiful song. I think I've Got One Jealous Again is an incredibly well-written song, an incredibly touching song, and funny too, and self-deprecating as well. So if I'm able, I will definitely go check this out. I will definitely go to the Fat Tour if I'm able. I think it's cool they're playing The Longest Line. Of course, that's inspired by the Subhumans' From the Cradle to the Grave, and Crass's Yes Sir I Will, and you know, Effed Up followed in that tradition. And I think it's cool when punk bands do 17, 18, 19, 20 minute songs. Let's wrap up tonight's podcast. I'm just going to blast through this. Adam and Rick, if you want to say something about it, you can. Integrity, they're doing one USA show this year, and it's going to be a Walpurgisnacht show, which is an EP they put out, which is one of their later eras when they were a little bit more savage, a little bit crazier, still hardcore, but more heavy metal, but very bombastic, destructive sounding heavy metal. So very violent, very noisy sounding, very long songs. They're playing a show in Baltimore. I'm definitely going to be there. I'm excited for it. Earlier in the day, there's going to be a Vermipyre show. Nobody knows who Vermipyre is, but they always seem to be around Integrity for some reason. And Vermipyre is this bizarre noise project. They're actually on the Punk News mixtape. And it basically sounds like The Exorcist as recorded from like 1910 blues record, or heard from a 1910 blues record. And it's far out. And I'm super excited to see this show because, you know, last year Integrity did the reunion of their classic Systems Overload lineup. And people kind of got, not their fill of that, but it wasn't as surprising after it happened when people saw it. I think less people were expecting a Walpurgisnacht show. And so this is a less celebrated era of Integrity, but maybe one that deserves another look, because it is a very experimental, wild version of the band. They were heavily influenced by Black Sabbath and just noise music. I don't know if Adam and Ricky, if you have any opinion on
this. I don't. It's cool. I keep meaning to – I mean, I have not been paying attention to that band. I keep meaning to, so I think now I will. But that's where is the show?
Baltimore, and I will be there. And while we're waiting, let's play the song Walpurgisnacht, which means Witch's Night by Integrity. We'll be right back. And John, we're back. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam.
I was about to say, and we're back, John. But you said, and we're back, John. This is what happens. We don't have a script. It's insane. It's complete anarchy.
Witches nights.
Are we done?
I think we're done. I think we can talk about Chumbawamba. What do we do now? we can talk about Chumbawamba some more if you guys want.
We could all just dance.
Yeah. We can get knocked down.
Like, no one say anything. Everyone just dance for a little while. This is what people want.
We're dancing right now.
God, I hope you're dancing.
I'm dancing.
Ricky's not. Fuck Ricky. Okay, so anyways.
That's awesome. Cool.
Were you dancing, Ricky?
Totally.
I'm still dancing. I'm still dancing. I can't stop dancing.
We should just make this the whole show. All right, so yeah.
Forget the Sandinista episode. Let's just do an all-dancing episode.
Yeah, we'll dance, and every once in a while pitch insults at each other for not dancing enough, but we won't actually know what's going on. If you want to see that or listen to that, I guess, podcast@punknews.org is who you have to email. I think that's it. I think that's it for this week, guys. Keep on
rocking in the free world. Cut.